44. La Purissima. Chia was on the bed watching television. It made her feel more normal. It was like a drug that way. She remembered how much television her mother had watched after her father had left. But this was Japanese television, where girls who could have been Mitsuko, only a little younger, wearing sailor suit dresses, were spinning huge wooden tops at a long table. They could really spin them, too, keep them up forever. It was a contest. The console could translate, but it was even more relaxing not to know what they were saying. The most relaxing parts of all were the close-ups of the tops spinning. She'd used the translation to check out the NHK coverage of the death hoax on the net and the candlelight vigil at the Hotel Dai. She'd seen a very satisfyingly pudgy Hiromi Ogama denying she knew who had nuked her chapter's site and then issued the call to mourning from its ruins. It had not been a member of the club, Hiromi had stressed, either locally or internationally. Chia knew Hiromi was lying, because it had to have been Zona, but the low-res people would be telling her what to say. Arlie had told Chia the whole thing had been launched out of a disused website that belonged to an aerospace company in Arizona, which meant that Zona had blown her country, because now she wouldn't be able to go back there. Nice as Arlie seemed to be, Chia hadn't told her anything about Zona. And she'd seen the helicopter shots of the vigil and of the baffled tactical squads facing an estimated 2,500 teary-eyed girls. The injury count was low, everything fairly minor except for one girl who'd slid down a freeway embankment and broken both her ankles. The real problem had been getting everyone out of there, because a lot of them had arrived 5 or 6 to a cab and had no way of getting home. Some had taken the family car and then abandoned it in their hurry to reach the vigil, and that had created another kind of mess. There had been a few dozen arrests, mostly for trespassing. And she'd seen the message Rez had recorded, assuring people he was alive and well and regretting the whole thing, which of course he'd had nothing to do with. He wasn't wearing the monocle rig for this, but he had on the same black suit and t-shirt. He looked thinner, though. Someone had tweaked it. He'd played it light at first, grinning, saying he'd never been to the Hotel Dai, and in fact had never visited a love hotel, but now maybe he should. Then he'd turned serious and said how sorry he was that people had been inconvenienced and even hurt by someone's irresponsible prank. And he'd capped it, smiling, by saying that the whole thing had been quite uniquely moving for him, because how often do you get to watch your own funeral? And she'd seen the people who owned and managed the Hotel Dai expressing their regret. They had no idea, they said, how any of this had happened. She got the feeling that expressing regret was a big thing here, but the owners of the Dai had also managed to explain how there was no on-site staff at their hotel in the interest of the guests' greater privacy. Arlie, watching this, had said that that was the commercial, and that she bet the place was going to be booked solid for the next 2 months. It was famous now. All in all, the coverage seemed to treat the whole thing as some kind of silly season item that might have had serious repercussions if the police hadn't acted as calmly and as skillfully as they eventually had, bringing in electric buses from the suburbs to ferry the girls to collection points around the city. Arlie was from San Francisco, and she worked for Low Res and knew Res personally, and she was the one who'd driven the van out through the crowd. And then she'd lost a police helicopter by doing something completely crazy on that expressway, a kind of U-turn right over the concrete bumper thing down the middle. She'd brought Chia and Masahiko to this hotel and put them in these adjoining rooms with weirdly angled corners where they each had a private bath. She'd asked them both to please stay there and not to port or use the phone without telling her, except for room service. And then she'd gone out. Chia had had a shower right away. It was the best shower she'd ever had, and she felt like she never wanted to wear those clothes again as long as she lived. She didn't even want to have to look at them. She found a plastic bag you were supposed to put your clothes in to be laundered, and she put them in that and put it in the wastebasket in the bathroom. Then she'd put on all clean clothes from her bag, everything kind of wrinkled, but it felt great, and she'd blow-dried her hair with the machine built into the bathroom wall. The toilet didn't talk, and it only had 3 buttons to figure out. Then she lay down on the bed and fell asleep, but not for long. Arlie kept popping in to make sure Chia was okay and telling her news, so that Chia felt like she was part of it, whatever it was. Arlie said Rez was back at his own hotel now, but that he'd come later to spend some time with her and thank her for all she'd done. That made Chia feel strange. Now she'd seen him in real life, Somehow, that had taken over from all the other ways she'd known him before, and she felt kind of funny about him, confused. Like all of this had pegged him in real time for her, and she kept thinking of her mother complaining that Lo and Rez were nearly as old as she was. And there was something else to it, too, that came from what she'd seen when she was crouched down in the back of that van, between the little Japanese guy with the sleeve of his jacket hanging down and Masahiko. She'd looked out the window and seen the faces as the van inched away, none of them knowing that that was Rez hunched down in there under a jacket, but maybe sensing it somehow, and something in Chia letting her know she'd never quite be like that again, never as comfortably a face in that crowd. Because now she knew there were rooms they never saw, or even dreamed of, where crazy things, or even just boring things, happened. And that was where the stars came from. And it was something like that that worried her now when she thought of Rez coming to see her. That, and how he really was her mother's age. And all of that made her wonder what she was going to tell the others back in Seattle. How could they understand it? She thought Zona would understand. She really wanted to talk with Zona, but Arlie had said it was better not to try to reach her now. The longest-running top was starting to teeter, and they were cutting from that to the eyes of the girl who'd spun it. Masahiko opened the door that connected their rooms. The top gave a last wobble and kicked over. The girl covered her mouth with her hands, her eyes filled with the pain of defeat. "You must come with me to Walled City now," Masahiko said. Chia used the manual remote to turn the television off. "Arlie asked us not to port." "She knows," Masahiko said. "I've been there all day." He was wearing the same clothes, but everything had been cleaned and pressed, and the legs of his baggy black pants looked strange with creases in them.
"And on the phone with my father."
"Is he pissed off at you because those Gumi guys came?"
"Arlie McRae asked Stockoff to have someone speak with our Gumi representative. They have apologized to my father. But Mitsuko was arrested near Hotel Dai. That has caused him embarrassment and difficulty."
"Arrested?"
"For trespassing. She went to take part in the vigil. She climbed a fence, triggering an alarm. She could not climb back out before the police came."
"Is she okay?"
"My father has arranged her release, but he is not pleased."
"I feel like it's my fault," Chia said. He shrugged and went back through the door. Chia got up. Her sandbenders was beside her bag on the luggage rack with her goggles and tip sets on top of it. She carried it into the other room. It was a mess. Somehow he'd managed to turn it into something like his room at home. The sheets were tangled on the bed. Through the open bathroom door, she saw towels crumpled up on the tiled floor, a spilled bottle of shampoo on the counter beside the sink. He'd set his computer on the desk with his student cap beside it. There were opened mini cans of espresso everywhere, and at least three room service trays with half-empty ceramic bowls of ramen.
"Has anyone there seen Zona?" she asked, shoving a pillow and an open magazine aside on the foot of the bed. She sat down with her sandbenders on her lap and started putting her tip sets on. She thought he gave her a strange look then.
"I don't think so," he said.
"Take me in the way you did the first time," she said. "I want to see it again."
Haknam, Tai Chang Street. The walls alive with shifting messages in the characters of every written language. Doorways flipping past, each one hinting at its own secret world. And this time, she was more aware of the countless watching ghosts. That must be how people presented here when you weren't in direct communication with them. A city of ghost shadows. But this time Masahiko took another route, and they weren't climbing the twisted labyrinth of stairs, but winding in at what would have been ground level in the original city. And Chia remembered the black hole, the rectangular vacancy he'd pointed out on the printed scarf in his room at the restaurant.
"I must leave you now," he said, as they burst from the maze into that vacancy. "They wish privacy."
He was gone, and at first Chia thought there was nothing there at all, only the faint grayish light filtering down from somewhere high above. When she looked up at this, it resolved into a vast, distant skylight very far above her, but littered with a compost of strange and discarded shapes. She remembered the city's rooftops and the things abandoned there.
"It is strange, isn't it?"
The Eideru stood before her in embroidered robes, the tiny bright patterns lit from within, moving.
Hollow and somber.
but he insisted we meet you here.
Who insisted? Do you know where Zona is?
And there was a small table, or four-legged stand, in front of the Eideru, very old, its dragon-carved legs thick with flaking pale green paint. A single dusty glass stood centered there, something coiled inside it. Someone coughed.
This is the heart of Haknam,
the Etruscan said. That same creaking voice assembled from a million samples of dry old sounds.
Traditionally, a place of serious conversation.
Your friend is gone, the Eideru said. I wished to tell you myself. This one, indicating the glass, volunteers details I do not understand.
But they've only shut down her website, Chia said. She's in Mexico City with her gang.
She is nowhere,
the Etruscan said. When you were taken from her, the Eideru said, taken from the room in Venice, your friend went to your system software and activated the video units in your goggles. What she saw there indicated to her that you were in grave danger, as I believe you were. She must then have decided on a plan. Returning to her secret country, she linked her sight with that of the Tokyo chapter of the Low-Res group. She ordered Ogawa, the president of the group, to post the message announcing Rez's death at Hotel Dai. She threatened her with a weapon that would shatter the Tokyo chapter's sight.
The knife? Chia said. It was real?
And extremely illegal,
the Etruscan said. When Ogawa refused, the Eideru said, your friend used her weapon.
A serious crime,
the Etruscan said,
under the laws of every country involved.
She then posted her message through what remained of Ogawa's website, the Eideru said. It seemed official, and it had the effect of quickly surrounding Hotel Dai with a sea of potential witnesses.
Whatever the next stage of her plan,
the Etruscan said,
she had exposed her presence in her website. The original owners became aware of her. She abandoned her site. They pursued her. She was forced to discard her persona.
What persona?
Chia felt a sinking feeling.
Zona Rosa, said the Etruscan, was the persona of Mercedes Purissima Vargas Gutierrez. She is 26 years old and the victim of an environmental syndrome occurring most frequently in the Federal District of Mexico.
His voice was like rain on a thin metal roof now.
Her father is an extremely successful criminal lawyer.
Then I can find her, Chia said.
But she would not wish this, the Eideru said. Mercedes Purissima is severely deformed by the syndrome and has lived for the past 5 years in almost complete denial of her physical self. Chia was sitting there crying. Masahiko removed the black cups from his eyes and came over to the bed.
Sona's gone, she said.
I know, he said. He sat down beside her. You never finished telling me the story of the sandbenders, he said. It was a very interesting story. So she began to tell it to him.